This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number's 877-217-5757. And you can send us an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. We're joined by Lamar White, the publisher of the Bayou Brief. And we have some ground to cover with Lamar, and something that was unanticipated when he was invited and accepted the request from yours truly to be on our show today. The Picayune has been purchased by The Advocate. Lamar at the Bayou Brief quotes NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik saying, "The former fish swallows the whale." And Lamar White, this is big news.
It's huge news. Essentially makes John Georges and his wife the most powerful couple in the Louisiana media. Now there's one newspaper in New Orleans again. The newspaper war, perhaps the last newspaper war in the country, has ended. It's big news. I think that we'll have to see who they keep on and who they let go to determine whether or not it's going to be really good for the city and for the state.
You note in your story today that John Georges has a net worth of approximately $381 million. He ran for governor in 2007, and received about 15% of the votes, spent a reported $11 million to get that 15%. And he has run again for mayor of New Orleans unsuccessfully. Now, if he were to run, he has two newspapers, presumably independent, but nonetheless, I would imagine it would be very difficult for employees of The Advocate to attack the man who writes the checks.
I would imagine so, too. It creates a real conflict of interest, though. So I kind of doubt that he will ever run, or at least anytime soon, would run for public office again. The last time he ran for mayor of New Orleans, I think he finished in third. He spent a fortune and received less than 10% of the vote. So, but I think he has done a really good job managing, you know, with, you know, the ownership of The Advocate since 2013, when he and his wife purchased the paper from the Manship family. You can tell it's dramatically improved.
Well, it's a case in which Baton Rouge might not have a seven-day-a-week newspaper, might not have a daily newspaper at all if it were not for John Georges. And now he says he will return 7 days a week to the New Orleans scene, as The Advocate has been part of New Orleans. But the Picayune has still been king of the hill, although a diminished king. And some folks are lathered up about the name. I guess the Times-Picayune may be no longer Lamar White.
I would hope not, and I would imagine that I think the most valuable asset that the Times-Picayune has is probably its name, the goodwill associated with that name. It's been around for nearly 200 years, and it's one of the most iconic names in journalism in the entire country. So. And that's part of what John Georges purchased, was that name. So I would imagine that they keep the masthead, keep the name the same.
It would probably be a very popular thing if they did. The Advocate is not as well-known in New Orleans, obviously, as it is in Baton Rouge. It just won the Pulitzer Prize, which was a great feather in the cap for the fine staff at The Advocate. They've done great work there, despite diminished resources. That's happening everywhere. And a listener asks about many of the talented people at the Picayune. Does this mean they're out of a job?
That is the biggest criticism of the deals, the way they handled this, and that yesterday laid off or essentially sent a 60-day notification to every single person that's employed at the Times-Picayune, telling them that they would no longer have their jobs in 60 days. We don't know individual personnel who's going to keep. Who's going to stay on? I would imagine that a lot of the names that most people are familiar with will stay on. Although, you know, we've seen on social media a lot of these reporters are already asking for job recommendations. So we'll see.
And they both papers cover the Saints. Both papers cover LSU. Obviously, some people will be let go because there isn't as big a need for as much firepower as that is available. And this, let's face it, also in this day and age, this had to do more with economics than with anything else. John Georges is trying to make a profit. And the Picayune knows that its profit level has diminished. I don't know if they were in the red, but they were headed in the wrong direction.
Right. And it's a national trend for these large newspaper companies, these conglomerates. They need liquid right now, short on cash. We know that John George's, when he purchased The Advocate, it was an all-cash deal. And so I would imagine that this was very similar.
Well, George's has Gambit. He has a lot of other publications as well. He's moved into Lafayette. He is, and I don't mean this as an insult to him, but in many ways he's becoming the Rupert Murdoch of Louisiana.
Or the William Randolph Hearst.
He probably would like that a lot better.
Right. Yeah, he really is. I mean, and it's there's some real concerns about that. I think we have to be honest about it. It's nice to know that, in a way, that the Times-Picayune is going to be saved as an institution. At the same time, we should have concerns about one person or one family controlling the bulk of the state's media.
Mm-hmm. And the others, as you have noted in the Bayou Brief, let's look at your hometown of Alexandria. There's an example mm-hmm. of a newspaper which had a great tradition that's gone by the wayside largely.
Right, and was sold for, I think, close to $68 million, just been completely gutted since. And just like, in a way, just like the Times-Picayune, the Town Talk in Alexandria, that the people were investing in the goodwill of its brand name, which I think no longer really exists, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Now, a few days ago, Peter Kovacs was on the show, and this was before all this erupted, but he said the Advocate, and I guess now the Advocate / Picayune, will not be endorsing candidates. But if John George's and company wanted to do that, they could become quite a player in politics.
Yeah, they really could. And I guess the Advocate has had a tradition of not endorsing candidates, right?
Well, a recent tradition. But they used to endorse candidates.
Right.
In fact, they even endorsed Edwin Edwards in 1991 for governor. I wonder why. Who was he running against?
I mean, that was an easy decision. But the Times-Picayune has always endorsed candidates.
Yeah, so, and Peter Kovacs noted that they endorsed Ray Nagin and lived to regret it.
And David Vitter, yes.
David Vitter, and on the front page in 1987, they endorsed Buddy Romer, and Romer went from fifth to first in a matter of a few weeks in polls and was largely a creation of the Times-Picayune. Other newspapers followed suit, by the way, and also endorsed Romer. But the newspaper industry has evolved, and part of that evolution is that there are competitors like you, Lamar White. You are a largely independent voice, if there is any such thing. And newspapers, of course, and other media entities, they have to make a profit to keep going. And in the quest to do that, often compromises have to be made.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on where we are right now?
Well, I mean, I think that we are in a transition period. Media is that folks are still trying to figure out the model, how they can monetize or capitalize on their online presence. The Advocate just constructed a paywall, and I guess we're going to see that with the Times-Picayune now. I'm not necessarily sure that's the best model. Some papers do it different ways. But I can tell you this, that about 80% of the traffic that the Bayou Brief receives, and I'm assuming that it's probably similar for the Times-Picayune and the Advocate, comes from Facebook and social media. So these are the dominant forces in the news media right now.
Henry at the Country Club. Henry, good morning. You're on with Lamar White.
Oh, hello, Mr. Jim. Hello, Mr. Lamar. Mr. Jim, you keep your finger on the pulse of the news business and whatnot. What do you think the possibility is of Mr. George's buying the Daily Advertiser over in Lafayette, since he's got all their personnel, and, of course, if he wants to move into sports, buying Tiger Rag?
Well, I don't know about Tiger Rag, but he doesn't necessarily have to buy the Advertiser. He may he may put them out of business. There is a I don't know if you'd call it a war, but there's a battle in Lafayette right now, Lamar.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've folks ask, please buy the Town Talk, please buy the Shreveport Times. I do know that with the Gannett properties, Gannett is basically looking to sell all of them. If they were to entertain an offer, it would be for all of the papers and not just one of them.
So, and a listener notes that you just said that the Town Talk was purchased for $68 million. When was that?
Mm-hmm. It was Jody White. And I know that sounds crazy. It's such a huge price. I can't exactly remember the year.
Well, anyway, just to show you how things have changed, the Town Talk cost more to purchase than did the Advocate.
I know. And that's why I brought it up. It's remarkable. There was a period of time in which, right before the real proliferation of social media, where these family-owned newspapers were getting sold to conglomerates for way more money than they're valued today. And Jody White of the Town Talk was smart at the time and figured out that this was the right time to sell and made a fortune.
Gaston on Highland. Gaston, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, I think I read this not too long ago. Wasn't John George's, didn't he work for Carlos Marcello in his earlier days? I mean, he's amassed quite an empire, but I thought he was a runner for him or something. I thought I had read. Do you have any insight on that?
I don't have any
knowledge
of that.
No, I don't believe that's accurate. I just realized that I said Jody White. That's my cousin, Jody White. Jody Smith is the Town Talk's former publisher.
Jody Smith, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and John George's, hats off to him. A seven-day-a-week newspaper in New Orleans, one in Baton Rouge, and they're both owned by John George's, who once saved the life of Peter Frampton. We'll talk with Lamar White about this and more when we return after this timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. And Lamar White of the Bayou Brief is with us, and we've talked in our first segment with him about the purchase of the Times-Picayune by John George's. No dollar amount was announced, but you can bet it was a lot less than it would have been a decade ago. But John George's, despite some concern that he might impose some kind of political slant to the newspapers he has purchased, I see no evidence of that, Lamar. I think he's done a good job staying out of the way.
I think you're right. Largely hands-off. I will say that I'm not a huge fan of some of the columnists that the Advocate has employed. I think maybe a couple of them no longer work for the Advocate, so I'm not going to get into that. But I'm hoping that they keep on some people like Jarvis DeBerry, because there are a lot of conservative voices in the Advocate right now. It seems like there needs to be a little bit more of a balance.
But there are many who would say that Stephanie Grace and James Gill are on the left, so to counter them, you have to have a Dan Fagan. But my guess is you're not a big fan of Dan Fagan. No, I didn't think so. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to your guests. Just two questions. Is the Advocate now the paper for the state? And locally, calling from Opelousas, can a small paper in a small town make it today? Thank you.
Bye. All right. Papers, large and small, are having challenges, Lamar.
Yeah, it's a really difficult question. People have written books of, the question in mind. I do think, though, that a small-town newspaper can succeed. It just needs to be nimble and savvy and figure out the right model for encouraging people to contribute. Like I was saying earlier, how do you monetize your online presence is what a lot of papers, particularly small papers, are having to face right now. It's easy if you're a big paper. Like I'm in Dallas right now. Dallas Morning News charges $10 a month for access to their digital version, and no one really complains about it. In a small town like Alexandria or Opelousas, it's just impossible to charge people $10 a month and try to operate a business, because there's not enough folks in the market to do that. So,
all right. Well, we have a governor's election in 5 months and 9 days, and Ralph Abraham is really the only candidate running against John Bel Edwards now. Eddie Rasponi's sitting on a lot of money, but I noted John Georges spent $11 million in 2007, got 15%, so money in itself. And Georges was a pretty good candidate, by the way.
Yeah.
Rasponi's done absolutely nothing, so unless something changes, he's a non-entity. Ralph Abraham probably wishes that the Bayou Brief were not around. You've been on his one-yard line. What's this about him in the oil industry?
Well, you know, he's been going after the governor, I think spuriously, for these oil and gas lawsuits. And it turns out that Ralph Abraham is actually the only candidate of the three who's ever personally sued an oil and gas company. He's got a family farm up in Richland Parish, and there was an oil pipeline that was being built across the farm. The company damaged the land. The farm was not able to to produce any crops that year, and so they took them to court for damages. Ultimately, it appears that they settled out of court for around probably $74,000 or $75,000.
All right. So he has sued the oil industry, and of course,
right.
Many. I ran into the brother of Derek Gordon, the former head of the Arts Council in Lafayette, a few weeks ago, and I think his name's Tony. And Derek, as we know, was a liberal guy. But Tony says, got to get rid of John Bel Edwards. He's killing the oil and gas industry. John Bel says the evidence proves otherwise. Killing him with these lawsuits, that's what he said. But John Bel Edwards right now is on cruise control. It's an amazing phenomenon that he is running largely unopposed, as Bobby Jindal did in 2011.
Well, I mean, he's got a great record, and throughout his first term, he's enjoyed good approval ratings, good favorability numbers. People remember Bobby Jindal. People remember what John Bel Edwards inherited when he took the oath of office, and we should be satisfied with where we are today. There's no need to rock the boat.
On the national scene, do we have a constitutional crisis right now, Lamar White?
Oh, I think we've had one since January of 2017. Are you referring to the Bill Barr stuff?
Yeah, and the fact that the president is not allowing his executive counsel, former executive counsel, to testify, that Bill Barr ignored a request from the House Judiciary Committee to testify yesterday. A subpoena may be necessary, and even that may be defied. What is going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. We're in a constitutional crisis right now, and there's just no way around that. What's going on is we have an erratic president who really doesn't understand or respect the rule of law or the checks and balances of the Constitution. So until that's resolved, we're probably going to be having a constitutional crisis for the next, 18, 19 months or so.
Well, John Neely Kennedy and William Morgan Cassidy and the five Republicans in the congressional delegation, they're lockstep behind the president. Is there any surprise?
Somewhat. We've seen some Republican congressmen and senators sort of, stake out some independence from the president. But, it is somewhat remarkable how much in lockstep they are. And we've seen the same thing with Ralph Abraham. He's basically running his campaign on a pro-Trump message. So he's nationalizing a statewide campaign for governor.
Well, the president does have some conservative media types who don't like him. George Will, the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist, is one of them. His most recent column says dislike of him should be tempered by this consideration. He is an almost inexpressibly sad specimen. It must be misery to awaken to another day of being Donald Trump. This is from George Will, who probably on the issues, like tax cuts, things like that, would be largely in accord with the president, but finds him personally so objectionable that he cannot embrace him to the point of attacking him. Like George Will has not attacked Democrats in the past, and he's attacked some, but not with the same kind of personal message that he has for this president.
It's also remarkable. I mean, I think that people like George Will understand that we have a crisis of moral leadership in this country, and I applaud him for not looking the other way.
Well, the Democrats have 21 or 22 candidates. One of them will get the nomination, and that person will be assigned to defeat Donald John Trump. And as it was proved in 2016, it's not an easy task. Who's out there who can beat Trump?
I think there are several candidates out there that can beat Donald Trump. I'm actually going to go see Pete Buttigieg today here in Dallas, and I know that there's Bernie Sanders is supporting a candidate for Fort Worth mayor tomorrow, and Beto O'Rourke's here tomorrow. I'm assuming that we're going to get a lot of folks in Louisiana soon. Kamala Harris has been down several times. She could beat Donald Trump. There's I think probably about five or six. Obviously, Joe Biden at the very top, the front runner, is capable of beating Donald Trump. But there was a poll recently, just maybe a day and a half ago, 2 days ago, that suggested that Beto O'Rourke actually is 10 points ahead Trump, the highest of any other candidate in the field.
Well, he's a white male from Texas. That would probably help in a national race, but to get the Democratic nomination, it may not help him.
Right.
And any of those candidates, I think you're right, could beat President Trump, but also any of them could lose to President Trump.
Yeah.
It seems that we're headed for another close race.
You know, I hope not, but it sure does. It sure does. This country is more divided now than ever, and we live in these media silos. So even though Donald Trump's approval rating has never been over 50%, the entire time he's been president, it's still going to be a close election. You're
well,
right.
And he won the election with 46% of the votes. Hillary Clinton received 2.1% more votes than he did, but lost the election in the Electoral College. And the president has shown that you can win a national election when you're defeated by almost 3 million votes by the other person. When George Bush beat Albert Gore, it was by about 500,000 votes. This is almost 3 million votes. It was, from a actual votes counted perspective, not a close race, but Hillary Clinton lost. And people say, look, well, if you take out California, Donald Trump would have won, which is true, but I don't think you can take California out of the equation.
I mean, you take Texas out and one other state, she wins again.
Yeah, and Trump won big in Texas. But there are those who believe that states like Texas and Georgia are in play. I'm not convinced of that, but
we'll see. But I think that Texas definitely is. Georgia with voter suppression stuff, I mean, it should be, but I don't know if it will be.
Louisiana?
No, not in play.
Not in play. Something you and Roy Fletcher agree on. He says there's a 99% chance that Trump will win Louisiana. I think Roy might be lowballing it a bit. His liberal roots are starting to come out. But Lamar, thank you for joining us. And the Bayou Brief is where you find out much more about Louisiana, what's happening from this intrepid journalist and excellent reporter, Lamar White. It's been a pleasure.
Appreciate it.
We'll be back Monday. Stay tuned.